Fingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Trevor Mathich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. So, Trevor, we were just having a discussion about the running back position and where it should be on the priority list for the Tennessee Titans this offseason. We know it's not at the top, but we were talking about Jeremiah Love. And as you well know, there is a stigma, it seems, about drafting a running back as high as the Titans have in terms of they have the number four pick. A lot of people don't like the idea of drafting a running back that high. But Jeremiah Love, compared to the other running backs in the draft, seems like he is head and shoulders above everybody else. So let me ask you this. Would it be a reach for the Titans to draft Jeremiah Love with the number four pick, and how could he impact the Titans' offense?
Reach? No, it wouldn't be a reach. He's worthy of being picked that high. The question is, should you take a running back that high? And generally speaking, I think that the answer would be no, because you can typically put together a pretty good running back room by having solid, dependable guys. You know, you got a big power runner and you got a faster guy on third downs, and rotate them in and keep them fresh. And you can have a running back room that operates at a pretty high level doing that. The reason why I don't think that applies to this particular one, Jeremiah Love, is because he is more like Reggie Bush than a typical running back. You go back to Reggie Bush, and they would move him all around, college and pro. He'd play running back. He'd move into the sort of an H-back position. He'd go slot receiver, wide receiver. They'd put him in motion. He could do any of those things. And Jeremiah Love has the ability to do the same kinds of things. I don't think he has the same just pure blistering straight-ahead speed as Bush, but that doesn't mean that Love isn't fast enough to outrun most guys on the football field. He is. It's just that Bush was just in a league of his own when it comes to just pure speed. Love's a little bigger. He's about 10 pounds bigger, but he has breakaway speed to take it to the house, and he will do that in the NFL as well. And the fact that he can do so many things at such a high level, he allows an offensive coordinator to get matchup advantages any given play. I mean, it's just amazing what he can do. Now, what other running backs in this draft can do that? I mean, you might be able to say Jadarian Price, who's also at Notre Dame, who a lot of people have as the second best running back, has similar skills, but Love is just super fast. And so, coming back to sort of the big picture view, would you take Jeremiah Love that high? The question is, knowing what you know now about Saquon Barkley, would you take him that high? Knowing what you know about Christian McCaffrey, would you take him that high? Because Jeremiah Love will be a very similar talent to those two guys, I think. They're different styles, but I think that from a standpoint of impact on the game, you're looking at potentially getting yourself another Saquon Barkley or especially a Christian McCaffrey.
Trevor, massive news in the NFL today. Mike Tomlin stepping down as head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers after nearly two decades. Which job to you is more attractive, the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Baltimore Ravens, and why?
I think the Ravens is more attractive right now. And the reason is that they've got a quarterback in place. They've got talent in place to be able to make noise in the playoffs. They just need to put it together and get it done. And especially the quarterback, Lamar Jackson, needs to show that he can be an MVP caliber player in the playoffs, not just in the regular season, which he has done a number of times, of course. I think the Steelers are incredibly attractive, in part because you know, if you're a head coaching candidate, that the Steelers aren't going to give you 2 or 3 years and fire you if you don't get the thing turned around the way they want it. Steelers have a history of great patience at the head coaching position, but then again, so do the Ravens with John Harbaugh. So I think you've got a similar situation with both organizations that you know that you're not going to have the rug pulled out from you. But the Ravens, I think, are more ready to win now. Now, having said that, the Steelers beat them in basically a win-or-go-home situation to win the division and make the playoff. But overall, I think right now Baltimore would be the team that you are more likely to be able to have success in, especially because the Steelers organization, and how much of this is Mike Tomlin, I don't know, but certainly the whole organization has failed to get the quarterback position right over the course of a number of years here, having brought in big-time veteran free agents. They picked Kenny Pickett in the first round of the draft. They had a young first rounder at quarterback. They still haven't gotten the quarterback situation squared away. And that's not just a new head coach coming in and picking the right guy. That's an organizational thing, whereas the Ravens are already set at the quarterback position.
We'll talk with Trevor Maddich, ESPN analyst, both football, both NFL and college football. Trevor, let's jump over to college football. The Indiana and Oregon game. Were you surprised how that game went? And is Indiana that good?
You know what? I am surprised that the score was what it was, Derek, because it was just an absolute obliteration on the scoreboard. But when you look at how that happened, it was in part an uncharacteristic Oregon meltdown. I mean, Oregon was, you know, they gave up 56 points, 28 of those points by Indiana, four touchdowns, came on 31 total yards by the Indiana offense. There was a pick six, and then because of two turnovers and then a blocked punt, Indiana had touchdown drives of 21 yards, 7 and 3. That's four touchdowns total, 31 yards, and now it's a blowout. And so I think it wasn't characteristic of what I think we'd see if we saw that blank game played five more times. But, hey, Indiana made the plays and Oregon didn't, so you have to give them credit. And I think Indiana is that good, but it's not because they're that much more talented. I mean, when you look at NFL talent, they're not. I mean, SportsCenter had a graphic they put up on the wall when I was waiting backstage a couple of days ago to go on and do my hit, and I took a picture of it because it was just incredible. It's like the last three teams that Indiana beat, Ohio State and Alabama, both had over 50 four- and five-star recruits on those rosters. Miami, which they'll face in the championship game, has over 40 four- and five-star recruits on the roster. Indiana has eight. But the reasons why they're able to be so good, first of all, is that they excel at bringing in the right guys from a scheme and a culture standpoint. And so they get the most out of their players. There's no friction there. And the other is that they don't make mistakes. I mean, as you guys know, more games are lost by mistakes than are won by big plays. And Indiana is one of the most mistake-free teams in college football over the 2 years that Kurt Cignetti has been coaching them. And so you've got to actually defeat them. Now you've got a Heisman-winning quarterback, and you've got receivers that will be in the NFL next year. You've got an offensive line that isn't overly talented by NFL standards, but are really hard to beat because their technique is just phenomenal. And you've got a defense that's disruptive in getting behind the line. All those things add up to winning football, even though Indiana doesn't have the most elite talent on paper.
Now, how do you think this game plays out, this national championship? Because I think both teams are similar in a lot of ways. They go about it differently, but I think what they want to do and how they do it and aggressive they are, it looks identical in a sense. But how do you think this game plays out? And which quarterback do you believe is going to have to do more?
That's a great question, Derek, because the way it shapes up right now is the great Miami pass rush against Heisman-winning quarterback for Indiana, Fernando Mendoza. And that may well be the key matchup. But for Miami's terrific front seven with at least two first-rounders in this upcoming draft rushing the passer off the edges, they won't be able to rush Mendoza until they first stop the run. I mean, in the two playoff games, Indiana threw it a combined 31 times. They ran it 90. Think about that. You've got the Heisman-winning quarterback, and you threw it 36 times to 90 runs combined over two playoff games. Now, part of that was because they jumped out to big leads against Alabama and against Oregon. But Indiana's not the kind of team that gets a big lead and then takes the air out of the football and tries to run it out by running the ball. Indiana wants to hammer you as mercilessly as they possibly can. And if you can't stop the run, they'll keep handing it off. And so the pass rush of Miami won't really matter all that much unless they can stop the run first. Now, if they're able to do that, then, okay, let's go get after the passer and see if they can beat that terrific offensive line of Indiana, which I think they'll probably be able to do because they're such good pass rushers. But the game to me, it's sort of counterintuitive, isn't going to be great pass rushing for Miami against great passing of Indiana. It's going to be how those pass rushers stop the run, because if they don't do that, they're going to lose.
Trevor Maddux is with us from ESPN. Trevor, I want to ask you about the AFC Final Four, if you will. Two really intriguing matchups where I could see any of the four teams ending up in the Super Bowl. Is there anything that jumps out at you at either matchup that you would lean one way or another with one of those four teams?
Well, I would think in the AFC you're talking about.
Just the AFC, yeah.
To me it's going to be really interesting to see how the Patriots and Texans go, because Drake May at quarterback has had an all-timer of a year. I mean, he has been absolutely incredible. But when you look at his schedule, he's gone up against one of the weaker schedules in the NFL, maybe one of the weakest by some metrics from the standpoint of the defenses that he's faced. And all of a sudden now, he's got the Texans that arguably are the best defense in the NFL with one of the best pass rushes. So we're about to find out how good Drake May really is. Is he good enough just to beat up on defenses that are just okay? Or is he good enough to actually move the ball and score points and win a playoff game against a truly elite defense? And I can't wait to see how May performs against these Texans.
How surprised are you, or how surprised should we be, that the Bills are a slight favorite at the number one seed Broncos?
Yeah, it's just kind of weird because the Bills have been so up and down. I mean, if you take Josh Allen, their quarterback, off of that team, are they in the playoffs? I mean, do you think they're in the playoffs if not for Josh Allen?
I don't think so. He's really elevated.
So yeah, he's been incredible. And so all of a sudden now, though, you get into the playoffs and you start to face complete teams where it's win and go home. You can't afford to lay an egg like they have done. I mean, just remember the Bills playing Atlanta. They were heavy favorites at Atlanta, the Falcons, in the regular season, and they just completely disappeared. And that's been a feature of the Bills over the last couple of years, and it's because they've had tremendous holes in the roster. And it's Josh Allen that's kind of kept them going and filled up those holes. But when you get into the playoffs, you can't afford to have that one big mistake because you don't have another game next week that you can play better in. So, you know, the fact that the Bills are being seen by our friends in the desert the way they are, I think is kind of interesting. But see, then you have the other side of it, which is the Broncos definitely have the better defense, but the Broncos have by far the less experienced quarterback. And the thing about Bo Nix is that he is a master at performing the tasks that Sean Payton is asking him to do. In other words, Payton knows what he does well, which is make quick decisions, get the ball out on short passes right now. But when you start to take those away, he starts to get far less capable and far less effective, and the Bills will know that. And so I don't think the Bills will try to cover the whole field. I think they'll come up and then take away the short passes and the ones about 10 to 12 yards down the field and just live with it if Nix can throw the ball deeper down the field, because – you know, their biggest advantage is quarterback on quarterback, and they've got to take away what Bo Nix does best.
Trevor Maddux has been our guest on D-Mace, Vinning and Adonic. He joins us every Tuesday and is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, as always, a pleasure. Thank you for your insight. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Jess.
615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction to what Trevor had to say about the NFL, the college football championship game. Next Monday, right?
Yes.
The 19th. That'll be a good game. But coming up next.